Hello and welcome to episode 391 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. Today is January 8th, 2024. I am Rollo McFlugel. With me is my co-host Slappy Jones. Show notes page for this episode will be mcflugel.com/391. Well, Slappy, the NFL playoffs are upon us.
DOA.
No, they decided they just wanted to play on the road.
That's it. Oh, man.
What a... Somehow, as of yesterday, picked for favorites. Yeah. Like 2.5 favorites against the Bucks.
If you got to play anyone in the first round, might as well be the Bucks, huh?
Yeah. Yep.
The Bucks are probably saying the same thing.
I know. It's... you know, it's funny. I was saying this to a coworker today. Remember whenever the Eagles would beat somebody, you would hear from everybody else complaints about, it really wasn't a good win, or actually, this is like making all sorts of excuses. Oh, if the refs made this call, you know, it would have been different. And actually, this is like a pretty good loss. What I like about Philly fans is after each one of these Eagles losses, it's been, that was terrible. What a terrible game by the Eagles. Like, no excuses for anything. No, like, not that a lot of these games were close, but it's just like, nah, it was bad. So I like to see that. Yeah, you know, Philadelphia, not only are the sports teams better than anybody else in the world, but the fans are also the best in the world by far. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Everyone else can suck it.
Yep.
Speaking of that, did you see the Flyers news tonight?
No.
So their number 5 overall pick, Cutter Gauthier, was one of the top players in the World Juniors tournament, which the Team USA, which he's a member of, just won gold medal. They just traded him.
Oh, wow. For what?
To the Anaheim Ducks for Jamie Drysdale and a second round pick.
Interesting.
And a lot of Flyers fans were initially upset and everything. Because... I mean, he was supposed to be a stud, basically.
Well, now he will be.
Perhaps. And everyone's kind of like wondering what in the world, why would the Flyers do that? But it came out that he apparently didn't want to play for the Flyers anymore. When they drafted him and everything, he said, you know, he's apparently, you know, made to be a Flyer and really excited to do it. And he wanted to join the club right away. And Flyers management said, you know what, we think your time would be served better getting another year of development. And then the last they talked to him, he said he didn't want to play for the Flyers anymore.
Nice.
Last they talked to him because they couldn't get a hold of him. Like, they refused to talk to the Flyers, I guess him and his agent. And so the Flyers were like, well, you know what? If you don't want to play for us, we're not going to force you. So see ya.
Yeah, interesting.
And they got a good return for him. Drysdale was a number 6 overall pick a couple years ago. Right-handed defenseman, can quarterback a power play. From what I hear, I mean, I'm not too familiar with him, but kind of just repeating what I've heard. Yeah. But they got a guy who's kind of will be an immediate. Asset.
Yeah, that's good.
So it's kind of funny. You imagine you're like 18 and you tell an NHL organization, nah, I don't want to play. You know, you drafted me. I don't like you guys anymore.
Well,
it's not like he was
pretty good.
Well, yeah, and that's what they were saying on the broad. I think Boucher was saying on the broadcast. It's like, it's not like this is an Eric Lindros or Connor Bedard thing where it's like you're coming in as the clear number one overall pick and a generational talent. Not that that's a great thing to do, but, you know, he's supposed to be a good player. Mm-hmm. Man, you wonder what's going through these people's heads sometimes.
Well, doesn't think he's got the right organization. I don't know.
I guess. So have fun in Anaheim.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that's where you're going to have a lot of success.
Yeah. Speaking of success, we are potentially probably on the cusp of the Bitcoin ETFs getting approved. I think the deadline's January 10th, so today's the 8th, so 2 days from now.
Nice.
And I believe that if they don't like explicitly reject the applications, then they just are like approved.
I don't know how the process works.
That's what I've heard a while ago. And I mean, it's interesting. Yeah, there's been a lot. I mean, this has been going on for a while. There's been a lot of talks about it and everything. But now we're kind of on the home stretch of it. And there's things like Gary Gensler, the SEC chair, had a tweet about, you know, not diving headfirst into quote crypto stuff and warning about the scams out there and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, that's an interesting thing to say, right, when everyone's talking about the Bitcoin ETF. Another thing that came out was that a lot of the ETF started announcing their fees. And they were kind of lower than everyone was suspecting they would be. An interesting thing about the fees was that they start out kind of, well, they say once the price hits a certain point, then the fees are going to go up. So that's kind of an interesting potential move. I don't know how these work. So it's one of those things where I've never followed an ETF before, so I don't know if that's a normal thing. It kind of makes sense as if you – I was talking to Carr about this a little bit. That if you, I mean, you obviously have an incentive to get that value of it up pretty high right away to get the higher fees. But maybe just kind of bring people in the beginning at the lower fees. And the fees were something, I think for the BlackRock, it was like 0.2% to start, and then it'll go up to 0.3%.
Mm.
And then, you know, all the rumors in the news today going around, and the price went up from about 43,000 to 47,000, which is not a small move. Sorry, I was taking a sip of water there. And so I think it's worth talking about, you know, what to expect if the price of Bitcoin really rips up, because it has the potential to. It really does.
It does.
Like, Slabby, what do you, like, there's, well, I think there's like 10 ETF applications out there right now. What do you think happens if they start getting approved?
I mean, honestly, I have no idea.
Well, you have to make for a good podcast, so.
I have no idea in terms of how high it could go. I mean, it could be $1 million in like a year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's wild, but I don't know. I it's only going to go up.
Yeah.
Which I guess that makes me a fiat guy or something.
Yeah. Did you see that today?
I saw something about it.
Yeah.
Someone tweeted something. I was browsing through quickly.
Yeah.
Or was that you? Was that you? Are you the Fiat guy?
No, I was criticizing the Fiat guy.
Oh.
I was actually... Hold on. Let's say my battery's low. I am plugged in. Power strip was turned off.
Nice.
And I just got a text from Carr. It says fun threat alert. What was I just saying?
I don't know.
Thanks. Oh, the Fiat Max. So yeah, someone, the Bitcoiner, was saying like, oh, this all this ETF talk is really showing all the actual Fiat Maxis out there.
Yeah.
And I think we've talked about this before. I don't get that mindset. To me, someone saying, like, you know, the price, criticizing people who are getting excited or looking forward to the price going up very fast and high. To me, that sounds like someone who's kind of fiat heavy. That they don't want the price to go up, that they're. They didn't get the Bitcoin that they wanted to or something, or they're just not prepared for Bitcoin to shoot up because they haven't
bought what they want to buy.
Yeah, which if that's the case, go buy it.
Yeah,
it's there. I don't understand what a lot of these mindsets are. Like, what do you expect to happen if you think that hyper Bitcoinization is going to happen? You think Bitcoin's going to become money? Obviously, this stuff is going to happen. There's going to be institutional purchases, government purchases of Bitcoin.
Everyone's going to have it.
Yeah. I don't know if people think it's going to just be this like little, we're in this little club of Bitcoiners and that we have the Bitcoin and no one else is going to use it.
But then it's going to be money and they're still not going to use it or like.
Yeah, it just if BlackRock doesn't start buying Bitcoin and institutions and governments don't start holding it in their treasuries, then Bitcoin fails as money.
Right.
Because it's going to take over everything that the dollar and fiat has.
Mm-hmm.
If you think Bitcoin's going to become the Bitcoin standard, this is the stuff that has to happen. Now, you can, like, I guess you can potentially lament that governments and if you maybe you don't like BlackRock, and that's fine. I'm not I have no opinion good or bad on BlackRock for the purposes of this conversation. I'm sure there's a lot of bad people involved.
Sure.
Just like any of those sizable things. But if Bitcoin's money, that means it's money for everyone. It's money for your enemies.
Money for people.
It's always astounding to me, and we talk about this all the time, that it's just, man, there's so many people out there that claim to be hardcore Bitcoiners that just don't understand this stuff at all. That it's when it's all just little sound bites that they hear that they can repeat. And I guess it makes them feel smart that they're able to repeat some talking points they heard in the podcast. They're good with that. But as soon as the rubber starts hitting the road and these things are actually happening, whether it's this, whether it's we've been talking about ordinals a lot, whatever it is, people start freaking out and losing their minds and panicking. Or that not everyone is going to be able to have an on-chain, you know, access to making on-chain payments when Bitcoin globally monetizes. Did you people never think about this stuff when you were talking about it and listening to you on your favorite podcast and they were talking about it? You didn't.
Like, you didn't think these companies would be one of, I don't want to say one of the first movers, but in this I mean, they're the ones who are going to get it started.
Yeah.
For global adoption.
Right. You have to think this is going to kind of be the... I bring this episode up all the time when we had Carr on episode 184, talk about global game theory.
Yeah.
This is probably going to have to be one of the dominoes. Because if you have BlackRock and Fidelity and a couple other huge players start buying Bitcoin, and there's going to be, I have to imagine there's going to be it's going to be like hungry, hungry hippos.
Yeah.
Out there with these guys trying to grab as much Bitcoin as they can. Other institutions that might be very fiat friendly and not like Bitcoin, or especially governments, I think it's kind of being understood at some level in governments that they have to start accumulating Bitcoin. And maybe they want to delay that as soon as they, for as long as they can, because they also understand Bitcoin is their downfall. Because if they're holding Bitcoin, they can't leverage the fiat system as much. If that's what's in their treasury, you know, that the more they're holding Bitcoin, the more people are demanding Bitcoin, the less it makes fiat worth. And it's just this inevitable path that Bitcoin's gonna just gobble all that stuff up. And as Bitcoin takes more value in the monetary markets, it makes the existing fiat system and the seniorage that they get from being the ones that are printing the money, it lessens that purchasing power on it. And when they don't have those money printers, they can't just do all the stuff that they do. So I think there's an incentive for them to delay that from happening. But it's like playing a game of hearts. Everyone is holding on to the hearts cards. But as soon as someone breaks hearts, yep, it's game on. And you're gonna see those cards start flying around. I'm not saying that they announce the ETFs are approved. If they approve them, they could not approve them. That would actually be kind of funny. I'm not, you know, I like I said, I don't know how these things work. I don't know that they're going to approve the ETF. And if they don't approve the ETF, that's fine. I don't really care. If we have cheaper Bitcoin for a while, they get to accumulate. Great.
Yeah.
It's going to happen eventually.
Exactly. Happen. So if this is the first try, it gets close, and then price crashes all the way down to 20,000 again. Like, good.
Sure. But if that happens, you know, the U.S. market's not the only market out there. It's not the only place where you can have ETFs. Right. Maybe if they deny this, then another country says, oh, you know what? This is our chance. This is our chance to make a play for Bitcoin. They're not gonna take the shot. Guess what? We will. And they're gonna go in and make it, whether they do their someone else through another country does an ETF through one of those international markets, or just a country says, hey, we're putting this on our balance sheets. So it feels like we're right on the edge of big moves. Speaking of the, not understanding how this works, it's funny. I had someone that's close to me that was, that I had convinced to buy Bitcoin. This was kind of a while ago, and he bought, you know, kind of a decent amount. And I had to send him money for something. And he's like, yeah, just send it whenever, you know, no problem, whatever's convenient for you. And this was kind of tongue in cheek, because I knew what the answer was going to be. And I said, oh, can I send it to you in Bitcoin? He said, no. You know, I'm going to be getting rid of it soon. Yeah, I'm going to use it to pay for this thing that I've been waiting to get. Says, you know, I've Yeah, I can't just have something sitting there forever. It's done well for me. You know, I'm just waiting for it to, you know, get back to even the last time I bought it or something. And for a split second, I thought about saying, well, you know, yeah, they're about ready to, you know, potentially approve ETFs, and the price could just like shoot through the roof. And I thought, you know what? I've bad conversations forever and ever and ever and ever. And at this point, it's I'm not going to beg people.
Yeah.
It's you make your own decisions. And it's funny because I've had conversations in the past like this about making a decision like this, about using it to, hey, it did well, but, you know, I'm going to liquidate it because, you know, I need to do something. It's not like, you know, we're not talking about someone just like making a frivolous purchase here.
Yep.
It's like something legitimate. But I was like, well, what do you think Bitcoin's going to do in 5 to 10 years? And the answer is, oh, it's going to do great. It's going to go through the roof. Okay. This person can reasonably well explain, you know, why Bitcoin has some value. He knows that there's only a certain amount that could be printed. He understands, and you know, they're just printing money with inflation and everything. And I said, okay, so you agree that in 5 to 10 years Bitcoin's gonna just wallop everything else? Oh yeah, absolutely. So well, why would you get rid of that compared to your other investments that you don't expect to do anything close to that? I say, oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
But again, when the rubber hits the road and your face is doing something, it's that whole, there's this like Bitcoin thing and it did really well, but there's no way it's going to have moves where it could go up in order of magnitude or something. Right? I think that's what goes through people's heads.
Right.
It's like when the money's not on the line, it's easy for them to talk, oh, yeah, it'll do great. But when they see, I don't think they can separate. Like, I think to most people, Bitcoin's just, they got lucky on just like any other stock or something that they were going to buy.
I remember when the price years ago went to like 7, remember it went to 17 and then came back down to like 10. Eight or something. I had a coworker telling me I got greedy. I should have sold, and I was like, yeah. "That's." I don't think you get it.
Right. Well, it's funny because I've had people recently come back to me and say, "Oh man, I should have listened to you back when Bitcoin was $20,000."
Yeah,
you were right. This really went up, and I'm like, dude, it was like we're not even close to like what it's going to do. Wake me up when there's another zero on the price, and they go, ha, ha, oh, okay, sure. Yeah. It's like, how many times do I have to be right before
there's
you
always
say,
money in the banana stand.
Always money in the banana stand.
How much clear do I have to be?
But, you know, how many times do you have to be right before people go, oh, I think he's... Maybe I should listen to him and try to understand where he's coming from.
Nah.
Yeah. That's what, like, we talk about this all the time of trying to trying to figure out where other people are coming from because we're autistic libertarians.
Yeah. We don't know how those people think.
But if I'm just trying to think of something where maybe there's like I don't know, just you have a friend, an acquaintance, somebody that you know that is consistently saying something. And it's a little bit off the wall what they're saying, but they're consistently right.
And they get known as the reputation is that opinion. That's how often they, that's how strongly they believe it.
Right. You hear him talk about it all the time. And over this kind of long time frame, they're usually right. And you talk to him again and they say, hey, man, this is what's going on. I think you should do this. And you go, okay. Like, would I are there people out there right now that I'm interacting with where I'm having this situation, not about Bitcoin, but about whatever, that it's just, I'm not ever putting two and two together. It's funny. I'm looking for an old tweet and on the side where it's like shows what's trending.
Mm-hmm.
JD Drew is trending.
What did he do?
I don't think he did anything, but I think it's in reference to Cutter Gauthier.
Oh, it's got to be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Cutter has his first game in Philly. Better hope they don't have a giveaway where the fans
could... Another radio giveaway.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm trying to think, like... I don't think there's that situations happening right now, but I'm hoping that I would react a little bit differently. And I don't know. I don't know
a similar situation.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's.
I don't know. It's just funny. There's certain, like. I know we're talking about like normies not listening, but there's even just Bitcoiners who like every bit of good news is bad news.
Yeah. So that's why I was pulling up a tweet. Mark Moss, who is just kind of a, I don't even know what he does. I've seen him talk a few times at like BitBlock Boom, but he's a, here's his, what his Twitter profile says, student of history, sound money advocate, freedom maximalist, financial sovereignty, Bitcoin, nationally syndicated radio show on iHeartRadio YouTube show. So, yeah, you know, he's a
guy.
Yeah. And this was last week. He says, 15 years after the launch of Bitcoin, 15 mm-hmm. years of pushing freedom money, and everyone is cheering on ETFs, BlackRock, and Wall Street coming in.
Yeah.
And so he and someone else are going back and forth. And so I said, I don't understand the people bewildered by ETFs who also think that Bitcoin will become the global monetary standard. They either don't get Bitcoin or they are doom porn grifters. And so Mark Moss replies, oh, is that because money only works if the government gives it to us or Wall Street blesses it? Is that why?
Yeah, that's why.
I just responded, no. A global monetary standard means everyone adopts it. So, like, Mark Moss is a guy that's he's no stranger to the maximalist circles and everything. And he talks normally when you hear him talk, he's sounds pretty bullish on Bitcoin and everything, but his response to me was like stupid. Like, I don't know mm-hmm. what else to say. Like, how do you have that response to what do you think if Bitcoin's going to become a global monetary standard? Why are you bewildered by ETFs? And he says, oh, you think it's money's only valuable if Wall Street blesses it, or the government gives it to us? Like,
well, I mean,
it's weird.
Yeah.
So, going back to person I was talking about, who's, I guess, preparing to sell his Bitcoin soon. Like, okay, you know, you're just gonna have to pay the consequences of it. And if they come back to me and say, you know, why didn't you warn me about the price going up? Like,
oops.
I did. How many times do you want me to tell you that it's going to go up? I don't know that it's going to be, you know, there's going to be any anger or anything over it. I hope not. I doubt it, actually. But there's going to be a lot of people out there, and you mentioned it, that, the, you know, the coworker or the acquaintance that was giving you a hard time about you being selfish. That's the kind of person that's going to be kind of like angry at you. And I don't know. I have no idea who that person was. Maybe it won't be. But yeah, to me, that's the kind of person that's going to be a little bit angry or sure, upset that the Bitcoin's gone way up. And
I was reading you have it. They were told about it. Someone believes strongly in it. It's like you want them to fail.
Right. And not that I want people to fail, but, you know, you've been in this for a long enough time and you get laughed at and ignored no matter how many times you're right. And you say, OK,
no,
you just kind of have to you have to separate yourself, not from those people, but separate like emotionally from them getting whether or not they're going to get Bitcoin or not. It's not worth losing sleep over it. It's not they might get mad. Who knows? Hopefully not. You know, we're not trying to make enemies here, but it's not worth you getting upset over it. That said, I think it's really important that if they come around and ask for help, I'm more than happy to help some people out.
Mm-hmm.
Who are actually going to kind of listen to the advice you give. And when I say that, like if someone comes to me and asks for help about Bitcoin, I don't really expect anyone to just drop everything they do and just follow everything I say. But if you've got some, I also don't think that's necessarily healthy just to blindly do what someone tells you to, even if they, you know, you think they are smart, they know what's going on. This is your kind of financial life and everything. So you should be making it, making decisions because they make sense to you. Now there's certain things like, all right, I understand the economics of it. But I don't really understand the technical stuff. How do I get a wallet and everything? That's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if I explain Bitcoin to you and you go, wow, I don't really understand a lot of what's going on with what you're saying, but it kind of makes sense. Like it's up to that person to go and figure it out. Now it might involve
or just going off, take a leap of faith and go.
They could do that, but I think like we didn't do that. Like we didn't take just like first time we heard about Bitcoin and heard the value proposition, just go, oh, we're all in.
Yeah.
Kind of took a while. I actually I was looking for something else, but found an episode where it was like Rollo goes all in on Bitcoin. And it was kind of the beginnings of the Get on Zero kind of thing before we started doing the Get on Zero episodes. And I had been pretty aggressively for a while getting into Bitcoin before that. But yeah, I don't think it's there's no shame in like learning about Bitcoin and or hearing about Bitcoin and you know before you sell the farm or something that you figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I wasn't. Yeah, absolutely.
I kind of forget where I was going with that, but just about, you know, what's if the price, because it's also just kind of inevitably going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The price is going to rocket up when we have hyper Bitcoinization.
Yeah.
If you like that term.
If you will.
So yeah, the other thing, and this is more like maybe practical advice. You know, understand, well, first of all, just because the price of Bitcoin goes up a lot does not mean that you necessarily have to change what you're doing. Don't get greedy. Like, don't start making these weird leverage plays. Don't try to, you know, leverage your Bitcoin to get more Bitcoin. Some of us have done that kind of thing in the past. in previous bull markets, because there are going to be all sorts of creative ways for people to get your Bitcoin, promising you all sorts of returns. If you send them your Bitcoin, it'll do this and it'll work while the price keeps going up. But as soon as that starts to falter, then all of a sudden these websites don't work anymore and everything. And goofy things happen.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just kind of like stay the course. Don't panic. Like, the bear market is when you should be figuring out what you're doing and getting comfortable with it. Because if you've never been in the bull market before, especially when we were in the bull markets before, Bitcoin was still relatively small, and yeah, you didn't have mainstream media talking about it
right
all the time. It didn't have a ticker. It was constantly showing on MSNBC. It wasn't water cooler talk at war. It was much smaller.
It was the weirdo still, who talked about it all the time and like, wow, it went up. That guy got lucky.
And it was still wild to be in that bull market while it was happening.
It was. Because, like, do you remember when it first started getting attention on TV and we're like, they're talking about it?
Right. Yeah, it was funny.
Like, I remember boomers, I knew they'd be, oh, I heard about your Bitcoin on MSNBC.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's going to be crazy. It's going to be, like, you're going to see the prices going to be making these daily moves that you didn't, like, you fantasized about, but didn't actually think would ever be possible.
Right.
And so that's not the time to be trying to make decisions that you weren't already comfortable with and already hadn't thought through. So, like, if this is the first time you're going to be on a bull market, going through that, just, if you take no other advice from me, just stay the course. You know, the conservative way, you know, I say conservative, and I'm saying you should be all.
What do you mean, like Donald Trump?
What's that?
Conservative.
Oh, yeah. No, but just that kind of just steady. Don't over leverage yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Just
do it. Manage your cash flows. Stick with what works.
Yeah. Just continue to do that. Now, I'll say this too, because it's kind of funny. I've been hearing people like the podcasters when they do their ad reads for like, you know, for an exchange or something where you can give them an XPub and they, you know, they have the automatic withdrawals. And we've been saying for a while that's actually kind of, it can be dangerous, because when you're telling people to do dollar cost averaging and you can dollar cost average, you know, every minute, and then you can give them your XPub and automatically withdraw every minute too, you're going to be stuck with a bunch of really small UTXOs, and then the fees go up and it becomes kind of difficult. But I've actually been hearing recently when they talk about it, you can automatically withdraw, they say, well, but you might want to have a minimum amount, minimum threshold set for your withdrawing. So everyone else is kind of behind these warnings, and it kind of stinks because it's kind of too late for a lot of people. Prices are high, and UTXO consolidation is it's not the cheapest thing or easiest thing to do right now. But that would be the other thing, you know. Prices on fees are kind of high, but they're not super high. And if the price really runs up, and if the price is running up and everything, and more people are getting into Bitcoin, then it probably means that there's going to be more transactions going on. So you would expect the transactions get all more congested. So the middle of a bull market is probably not the time to try to figure out how to, you know, do these UTXO consolidation. And then the other thing too is that, you know, if you expect fees are going to be high and you want to be using your Bitcoin, if you haven't done so already, think about spooling up a Lightning node, getting the channel in now, so you're not trying to, you know, panic open a channel and end up spending a lot of money just to open the channel. Do that now and figure out how to learn, you know, learn a little bit how to use use a Lightning network now if you haven't done it, as opposed to, again, in a panic when you're trying to rush into doing it. What's nice is there are a lot of, like, kind of neat, you know, little tools and features you can use for the Lightning network with, like, Blockstream does a lot with Liquid, where you can reload channels using using Liquid Bitcoin. Makes it a lot faster and cheaper to do that. So yeah, we're on wild time, Slappy. It's gonna be exciting.
Yeah, it's fun. It feels like it's been a while.
Yeah, I guess when was the last? Well, it was 2 years ago. It was
2 years ago, right?
Two years and like 4 or 5 months, I guess.
Yeah, went up to like 64 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Oh, sorry.
Yawning already.
Yawning at the price going up?
This is child's play right now.
It is.
And if you come out and say, oh, Bitcoin hit the price that I was waiting for and I cashed out. If you say the words cash out, then yes, then we'll have a problem.
Yeah, don't cash out.
Yeah. Then you would be a fiat maxi.
Mm-hmm.
To not be in this trying to pluck cuckbucks. Which there will be plenty of people doing that. There are certainly still people out there that are just traders and trying to get a lot of dollars. And they're just using Bitcoin as a vehicle to do that. However, what's going to be really interesting about that is those that do, and when they do cash out and then they see the price just keep going up and up and up and up, they're going to kind of realize the hard way that, oh, I should have just held on to that. And so the next time they're presented with that, then maybe they will hold on to it. It will be a longer term play. And it does make sense. Like, the only play at some point is once you realize that it's poised to become the global monetary asset, then you just make that your money.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's going to be. Do it now. And if it's going to go up, then the only way to maximize that exposure to that going up is to only hold it and just sell what you have to pay off your living expenses and what you're doing. Like, live your life. That's the other thing, kind of goofy thing too, is that, and I don't know how serious people are, because it's Twitter, it's the internet, and people could say whatever they want. But this idea that, I see people trying to take pride in not spending any money ever. And, you know, I live well below my means. You know, I don't take fancy vacations and
neither do I.
Don't go out and
I have a lot of mouths to feed.
Yeah. Well, even if you didn't have a lot of mouths to feed, I mean, obviously you'd maybe live your life a little bit differently, but probably not that differently. I mean, I think we're both similar in that way. We're kind of like simple guys.
I have no desire for many material things.
No, we appreciate some finer things. We have some hobbies, like, certainly. You know, we tend to like some of the nicer beers when we have some. You're into cigars, and I don't think you're typically buying Philly blunts.
No.
Which is good, but, like, you know, having having some disposable income allows you to do that kind of thing.
Right.
But that's like, if I didn't buy that six pack of, really four pack, if we're talking Belgian beers, that's normally what they come in, because they're more expensive. You know, especially from having that with some friends or something, and kind of enjoying that. Or being able to enjoy a cigar on your porch.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that are more important than Bitcoin, more important than money. And being able to take advantage of having a good money to allow you to have good, fruitful experiences is, I think, a good thing. So, like, you want to live your life. You can't take it with you.
That's right.
You can certainly leave it for your family. And that's good. Obviously, I mean, I think that's a worthy goal and everything. But, money's just a tool at the end of the day. And if you manage your finances and your life well, then, you can have some nice things every once in a while and have some good experiences in life. So I know there's some, like, memes about not owning any chairs in your house and selling all your chairs so you can buy Bitcoin. That's funny, and I like it. And I think it's overall, like, sending a good message that, get rid of stuff you don't need. If you're
needs chairs.
Right. But this is the kind of things that sound money does for you. And I'm not trying to pick on anyone that does this. If this is your thing, this is your thing. But, like, you're going out and buying a $8 cup of coffee every morning. And going out to lunch every day at work and spending $20 on that.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's situation is different. So I'm not going to say under no circumstances you can't do that. But, maybe think about making your own coffee or just drinking the coffee at work and packing a lunch and saving a little bit of money that way, because those sorts of changes will have an impact on your monthly budget, and it means you can save more, and you could put that money towards a rainy day or maybe something a little bit with more sustenance for life, doing away with that cup of coffee or something that you could get a lot cheaper otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, you can make pretty good coffee at home. I'm going to start being a coffee snob here. Speaking of coffee, I bought a drip coffee thing, or not a drip coffee. That's what I have.
Which press?
No, I've had a French press for a while and it's good. But I don't like cleaning out the filter thing.
Yeah.
But I bought a pour over thing.
Oh yeah.
And I thought that I would do it like, I'll just do it whenever, maybe I don't make I just drink coffee at work during the work week. On the weekends I make my coffee, and I thought, every once in a while I'll pull that out and do it. But once I've used that for the first time, I think I've used my drip coffee pot once.
Nice. I enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a different, I think it's like makes it really smooth and it brings out better flavors. It's not difficult and it's not time. I mean, you have to boil the water yourself. I have a tea kettle. Just throw the water in there, let it come to about a boil, and I think actually you're supposed to be just on. You got yourself a stew going. You're supposed to be around, I think, like 200 degrees, not boiling with the water. But I measure the coffee out.
Excuse me.
By weight, and I use a 15-to-1 weight ratio for water to coffee. But you could pretty easily, you know, ground size considered, convert that to a volume if you want to just get your measuring cups out and stuff. But just kind of weighing the coffee grounds and then weighing the water as you're pouring it in, it really doesn't add that much time to making the coffee. I could see if you're running around and there's five people in your house that want coffee in the morning. Yeah, maybe the coffee pot works well. But yeah, I just wanted to talk about my pour over endeavors.
There you go.
Because it means I'm better than everybody else.
That's correct.
So, all right, now I'm talking about pour over coffee. I think I'm done.
Yeah, and I got something in my throat. I'm going to keep coughing, so.
All right, so I was going to ask if you had anything else to say. I guess not.
Keep muting myself. Excuse me.
You got it out?
Yeah, I don't know. I think so.
Good.
All right. Let's end it there.
All right. So, yeah, this bull market's going to rip your faces off, and it's going to be great. And if you miss it, I don't care. Yeah, but if you decide you don't want to miss it anymore, I'll be there for you.
Yeah, then I do care.
Yep. So thanks for listening, and we will catch you next week.
Peace.